Even you ask the Mahayana practitioner or people who learn Mahayana, actually it's not easy. I find Mahayana not easy to start off with also. And even a lot of Mahayana, they are not well versed in the whole teaching. Well, Mahayana actually, they have so much teaching. It's a lot more than Theravada. At least Theravada one more systematic. So the Theravada one, the only confusion they have is the method, technique, and the teacher, and the various type of deviation and discrimination and argument also. Apart from that, the teaching is quite standard, quite authentic. It's only one teaching actually, but the interpretation of it, the commentary, a lot has debated, and because of that, it becomes very confusing. But for Mahayana, I can tell you, it's not easy to understand. If you are new to Mahayana, you are very confused because of the numbers of sutta. And the Mahayana's problem is, like I used to share in the early days, Theravada has all the essential teachings. The foundation of Theravada is very good. All the essential teachings of the Buddha are there, authentic, well preserved. But the explanatory part, the commentary part has deviated. That one is a problem. Yeah. But like I explained to you and Sister Lee, they are called Theravada because they are the teachings of the Theras. Thera are monks who have more than 20 years of ordination, full ordination. Then they qualify as Thera. So they are called the Orthodox tradition, means the teachings of the elders. And these people are very orthodox, very conservative, and they don't want to allow any mixture or anything which they are not sure to come into the teaching. That's why they chop everything until it's called the conservative Theravada, orthodox tradition. So a lot of things they don't recognize. Even Mahayana teaching, or a lot that is not in the sutta, they don't recognize. So that is how it actually come about and happened. And because of that Thera, that teaching cannot flourish, cannot expand. That's why in the ancient time, during the period of controversial debate that time, I think maybe a few hundred years back, Chief Reverend, our late Chief Reverend K. Sridharmananda, he used to share with us. He said he is grateful to Mahayana because during that debate, actually Theravada cannot stand up. They failed to debate with the Hindu teachings in India. So Buddhism, which started in India, was assimilated into the Hindu teachings and kicked out of India later. That was the problem. Then later Mahayana came in and went and clear up the debate, and they won. That's how Chief Reverend said, because of that, Mahayana become relevant. So they had the first council, second council, then they agreed to take in the Mahayana teachings and all those things.
Is that the
But
second
what?
council, Ratio? Was it the
Yes, I
sixth
think
council?
second and third, second and third. Second and third. Third council, if I'm not wrong. Then only it starts to go recognize and allow the thing to come in. Then they have the Abhidhamma added. Actually, they were very reluctant. Yeah, Abhidhamma was not inside. Because without the Abhidhamma, they cannot debate. They lost all the debate. And because of Abhidhamma teaching, the higher teachings, they won the debate. And the Abhidhamma come from actually Mahayana teaching. But Theravada categorized them in a very orderly manner to suit them. But the actual understanding of the teaching is still Mahayana side. So what I'm trying to share with you all is how it evolved and become what it is. The pro and con of Theravada and Mahayana. Actually, the two teaching you should cultivate together. they become seamless and become very beautiful, you understand? So whatever that Theravada has is the Pali chanting that they pass down, that was very authentic. But like I explained to you and Miss Lee, the interpretation of it is no longer authentic. The commentaries and all these things, the explanation. Because they come up with method, technique, thought-based type of teaching that didn't really explain the real teaching. That's why it's no longer authentic, no longer penetrative, cannot awaken living being. That's why we are seeing the result of what happened, less and less of the awakening. Then when we come over to Mahayana tradition, the negative part of the Mahayana teaching is it's not systematic. They don't have the basic teaching clearly spelled out. This basic teaching of the Theravada tradition, like all the Three Evil Roots, Noble Eightfold Path, Four Foundation of Mindfulness, all the various sutta, right, they are only taught in the Mahayana tradition if you have those master or teacher who really know them and teach to you. Whereas you go to a normal Mahayana monastery, you don't learn all those teaching. But these are not taught. They teach you all the Mahayana Sutta, which actually are very abstract and esoteric. Then they have all these six page here, platform sutra, all those things. So that one, take the teaching to another problematic level. Because without the foundation, the base, you can never comprehend the higher teaching. It's like you're building a building without doing a proper strong foundation to stabilize your understanding. You put up the high-rise building, you will get into trouble. So the pro and con, you can see very clearly. But Mahayana has its higher teaching. But this higher teaching, like I explained, are for enlightened being to understand. Because these are sutra spoken by the Buddha. Most of it, except the six patria, platform sutra, all those things, by enlightened being. And if you are not enlightened, the words to you is Dhamma knowledge. It's not the real Dhamma. But if you have your past, you have cultivated, you have the understanding, then the word has its meaning. So the problem of Mahayana is, unless you awaken, you are the real Dhamma master with the understanding of teaching. Otherwise, you teach, it will be the standard teaching that they have in the books, in the text, the sutta, the commonly accepted one, like the flag and the wind analogy and all those things. Then the heart sutta, they have their teaching. But those teaching, like Theravada, they are not penetrative because they are not the true teaching. Whereas the enlightened being, the awakened one, when they teach, is completely different. Because they realize the true mind. They know what the true mind is, the silent mind, that nature, everything. So from there, it manifests and they teach. That's like straight from the heart, direct from the heart. But not in most of this teaching that you find in the Mahayana tradition. That's why you go to a Mahayana temple, you find it very difficult to develop the understanding and the training. That's why I don't blame. There was one monk, remember, I think a Malaysian monk, if I'm not wrong. He started with Mahayana. Then after 4 or 5 years, he start to find out why he cannot progress. Then finally, he came to the conclusion, it's not the authentic teaching, he said, Mahayana fake one. Then you go back to Theravada. Then he ordained under Theravada tradition. There are many such cases because people cannot understand. But when you understand, Mahayana has his teaching, Theravada has his teaching. And like I explained, from Theravada's teaching and understanding, you can penetrate and understand all Mahayana teaching. You don't need any other teaching. The anicang dukang anatta, paticca samuppada, the essential dhamma. From there, you truly understand Theravada, penetrate Theravada. All the Mahayana teaching, you understand. That's why I can teach. I can share. Of course, you can say, I have my past and all those things. But actually, I reflect back, it's the same as the Theravada teaching. Except that Theravada don't understand the profoundness of their teaching. They are anicang, dukkang, anatta. Do you know anatta, that word, is very profound, very complete. Anatta is not just non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. Anatta includes sunyata, emptiness. That's why Theravada has that word, sunyata. But it's not taught. It ends up, Mahayana teach sunyata. The Heart Sutta. The five aggregates are empty. Empty of what? Empty nature of existence. But they cannot understand. Empty doesn't mean nothing. That's why the Buddha teach the five aggregates form and mind. Even though it's not you, not real, impermanent, non-self. Of course, finally empty, right? The five aggregate is empty. Wu yun jie kong in the Heart Sutta. But why people cannot understand? Because this is karmically conditional. This is not our true mind, our true nature. That's why they are very confused. When the Buddha teach, like I explained, the five aggregate of form and mind, under the first noble truth, the final summary, the Buddha say, in short, if you have self-delusion, sakayadity, and you attach and grasp onto this five aggregate of form and mind, then it condition grasping. That's why upadana khandas dukkha. It become grasping aggregate because you cling, you grasp. And this one is not your true nature. This one is impermanent. That's why the Buddha say rupang anicang, vedana anicang, sanya anicang, sankara anicang, vinyanang anicang. Then rupang anatta. Then sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe sankara anatta. So all this is in the teaching. But they already lost their ability to comprehend its deep meaning. So when the Mahayana teaching talk about sunyata or emptiness, it's no different from anatta. It's actually anatta. And with anatta, you can understand all this. That's why if you look at the Theravada Sutta, why did the Buddha say rupang anicang, then rupang anatta? Rupang is form. The table is also a form. The house is also a form. No life. Then he say, rupang anatta. You don't tell me the Buddha is so naive as to say table is non-self. There is no life inside that. How can it be non-self? But he says it's anatta. Because it's not a permanent unchanging entity. It arises through condition. Dependent originating. Then it will cease when condition cease to be. That's why it's anatta. Empty nature. Not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why it is sunyata. Means empty. Empty in the sense, not nothingness. Empty means it is empty of whatever that you want to grasp onto or cling onto. Means, like I used to say, empty nature or existence. Finally, empty. When you are born into this world, you come empty. When your form and mind cease, you die, you pass away. When consciousness separate, also return to nature, also empty. That's a lai ye kong, qi ye kong. So ultimately, no reality. empty nature existed. Whether you exist or you don't exist, all these are not real. No ma, not you, but segmented life of your nature that come. That one is true. That one is real. But that one is impermanent. Go the way of nature. That's why you have to understand all this. Then you will come to understand that, hey, no you, hey, no me. Because every segmented life that we come through the karmic conditioning, that one is not you. That one is just one segment of your life, karmically conditioned for you to arise in this conditioned world to do what you want to do. Like I used to say, every life we arise, we are born as different beings. Which one is us? Billions of them. None of them are me. But I cannot deny that this life, my segmented life, is this form of mind, which you call Brother Teo. And this one exists. But this one is not me. This one is karmically conditional for me to do my work, perform my function. And this one is subject to karma. That's why you have to understand all this. Then you will understand why the Buddha said this one is unreal, impermanent. When you attach, cling, and grasp, it leads to suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. It's non-self. You cannot cling onto it, grasp onto it, hold onto it, and say, this is me, this is I. Yeah, that will be delusion, foolish. So all this understanding has to be there. So no different from Theravada understanding, you penetrate, you will penetrate Mahayana teaching. Everything is the same. So this is what people don't understand. So when you understand, you will rejoice because this teaching is so beautiful. Okay?